Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
So let's do just that. Let's go kick some glass this morning here with Patty Grimm.
And we have an amazing person with us today, Laura Stewart. I'm going to say a few personal things about Laura, and then I will read a bit of her official bio because it's pretty impressive. But Laura is somebody I'm proud to call a friend, a mentor, someone I look up to, and someone who I know I can call when I have a tough question I want to ask or I need some help in some specific way. Laura is a speaker, author, founder of Wisdom Learning, LLC. It's a consulting company specializing in educating and inspiring entrepreneur leaders to get off autopilot and find success. Her amazing book is called What Would a Wise Woman Do?, which I think is awesome because it's always about asking the right questions to come up with the right insights in your life. Before founding her company, she had 29 years experience in both Fortune 100 companies and small businesses, and she launched her highly effective and highly competitive IT company, and it really enabled her to get coverage, so she got lots of national exposure. She's been a keynote speaker in a number of areas. Published in National Association and Industry magazines, holds several technical degrees and serves on multiple boards and corporate boards. She's an amazing person, and I love her motto or her philosophy, which is treat everyone better than they expect to be treated, while collecting and dispensing wit and wisdom to grow along the way, and always ask the right questions. So I'm so excited to have Laura here today. So Laura, why don't we start off with just telling us a little bit about you and your background? And this is going to be an interesting show because we're going to talk about Laura's background and experience in her book, What Would a Wise Woman Do? But also her new role she's taken on as being full-time caregiver for her mother, which is a role many women end up taking more often than men. So Laura, first let's start off about you, kind of your career, your company, and then we'll get into some of the other questions.
For having me on the show. It's fun to be on the other side of the microphone for a change.
Yeah. Well, I was interviewed on Laura's show, so we've kind of been on different sides of the mic here. So this is kind of fun.
It is. And I love your show, and I love listening to the interviews that you're doing. You really are a consummate interviewer and get the essence of what's going on out there. So thank you for creating your show.
Well, thank you.
So, I mean, a little bit about what I've been doing, as you mentioned, the last 5 years, really, I've been caregiving full-time for my mom, who has dementia and congestive heart failure and a few other things. In the last couple of years, it's really escalated to the point where I've pretty much stopped a large portion of my business life because it's hard to figure out how to be consistent with things. When my book first came out, I was really doing a lot of keynote speaking, doing webinar keynotes as well, which are really great because you don't have to travel.
Right.
And, you know, you get them recorded from the comfort of your own home, and it's really wonderful. Hopefully nothing happens like that CNN guy that was being, I think it was CNN, he was mm-hmm. being interviewed, and his kids come running in.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was great. And then the wife kind of crawls in on the floor to pull him back out. That was a classic.
It was so classic. And then the backstory was even more classic. She was watching TV in the living room, and the kids saw the interview. And they were like, oh, daddy's in his office. So they thought it was okay to just walk in. So it just goes to show. I mean, both of us are on live radio. You never know what's going to happen, and you just kind of have to go with it. But the good news is, you know, when you do interviews like this, you always have to make sure to be prepared. God forbid you have to stand up quickly. So
yeah.
I don't care what anybody says. You should always be dressed all the way around.
Don't just dress from the waist up.
Which some people have done. I know that because they've told me after they've been on my show that they've done it only from the waist up. So I always laugh at that.
Yeah.
But, you know, going from a life of geek, owning my own technology services company, you know, as a multi-state company, and then switching to the other hemisphere of the brain and doing more transformational speaking, consulting work, helping people transition their businesses and their lives to another realm, I think all help me prepare for this role of caregiver, although at the same time, I am so completely unprepared. I mean, the last few days, all I've wanted to do is eat carbohydrates, either yell and scream or cry. You know, it's just like that roller coaster of emotions, which I never had when I was dealing with clients and staff and, you know, dealing with offices in two states. This is a much harder role than I ever expected it to be.
Yeah, because you've run your own tech, your multi-state tech company. You've got a degree in computer science. You're doing everything. You were sports information director in college. And now this seems to be harder. Why is it so hard?
I've agonized over that, actually, Patty, quite a bit, is why is it so hard? And number one, I never had children. So not having children and having a parent enter into mental childhood, and in some cases physical childhood, because of incontinence at times, not remembering how to cook for themselves or where they're supposed to be going or able to pick out their own clothes. I never had experience with that like some people have with children. I've always been on my own, or I've been married twice. I got divorced in the last couple of years from my second husband. And that shocked me as well. I wasn't expecting that one, but in a way I was, but I wasn't willing to look at it. So I think this is so hard because I'm watching my mom, who was my rock, deteriorate before my eyes. She's kept her spirits really high, but she's not there all the time. And I can't go to her. I have to lie to mom, because if I start to tell her what's on the schedule for tomorrow, her brain just starts obsessing because she's afraid she's going to forget something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've had to lie by omission. And I guess I was trained as the good girl. I don't lie to my mom. I didn't lie to my dad. I don't lie to my mom. The one time I did, I got caught.
Of course you did.
Because I don't lie. It's not what I do. I hate doing it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what's so hard is knowing and thinking every night when I hug my mom, this might be my last hug.
Oh, I know. I know. I went through it with my dad. He had dementia for about 8 years. And actually, when it was first diagnosed, my son was living with him while he was going to college. And he called me one day and said, there's something wrong with Grandpa. And he started telling me what was going on, and he was falling down. He actually lost his car. He thought he lost his car at the Mission Viejo shopping mall, but it turned out he'd been at Mission Viejo Hospital, and somehow he had fallen down the hill. There's a big hill between the hospital and the mall. He'd fallen down the hill. He was completely dirty. He was convinced somebody had stolen his car, and that was kind of the start of things. And I was living in Asia at the time, and one of the reasons I came back from working for Microsoft in Asia when I was heading up the Asia Pacific region was that I needed to come back to help my sister take care of my dad. And I remember this man who was, like you said, my dad was my rock. My dad was the one that taught me to play tennis. My dad was the one that made me, before I could get my license, learn to change the tires, spark plugs, and change the oil before I could get a license. And to take the driving test in a truck with three on the column. And most young viewers don't even know what the heck that is.
Yeah.
And then you see this person deteriorate before your eyes. And I remember one time we went to visit him towards the end when he was looking at a high school annual. And it wasn't his annual, but he was telling me about people he knew. These people were much older than him, and so I fully understand. I was never the full-time caregiver like you are, so I really admire what you do. But it's incredible to see that person who was your rock just fade away.
Yeah, and, you know, I wasn't really expecting the emotional hit that was there. And then, you know, I watched my own health fall apart because mm-hmm. I'm so stressed out and so watching out for mom. I mean, in November, I was heading out the door to go see my mom, who was at a local rehab center to strengthen herself after some falls. And I was packing a bag to stay overnight someplace closer because I was giving a speech the next morning to 220 women. And I missed a step and I broke my foot. And I'm laying on the floor in my house alone. The phone had gone flying out of my hand. And I'm going, I cannot believe this just happened to me. And I'm laying on the floor. All these thoughts are going through my mind. What's going to happen to Mom if I had died or if I'm incapacitated? And also, you'll laugh at this. I looked straight up to heaven and I said, okay, God, I said I needed a break. I didn't mean a literal one.
Exactly. And what's really hard, because we're both women that have been self-sufficient. We've run our own companies. We've worked for big companies. We've always been kind of a rock ourselves. And when you start to see yourself kind of fall apart, like you said, falling down or doing things you wouldn't normally do, that's really hard because you start thinking, am I crazy? Or what's wrong with me? Why can't I deal with this? I can run a multinational company. And I can't take care of this? That's really hard.
It really is. And 4 days after that fall, I fell again. And I injured my wrist. And I just had surgery 5 weeks ago on my wrist.
Yeah, I remember.
For all this serious damage. And I'm sitting there going, this is crazy. And all of a sudden, I started feeling like I was in PTSD, dealing with post-traumatic stress. And I went to the doctor and they're like, you have every symptom of somebody who is in such massive shock that you can't even deal with everyday actions. I mean, the littlest thing would set me off. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit it's the first time in my life I needed to get some medicine help.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't have to stay on it long. But I needed to get some anti-anxiety meds to calm my nervous system down. And that moment when I had to ask for that help made me realize how much I had taken everything on myself. I had done it with my businesses, with all of my clients, but it seemed different running my business, right?
Right, exactly.
Taking it on myself for my mom, that felt like I had to. You know, that's what I must do. In a lot of other cultures, that's immediately what happens. In America, that's not always what happens. We ship our elderly parents off to nursing homes or assisted living facilities. But, you know, I was brought up that you do what you can for your family. And all of a sudden having to say, I can't do this by myself. I need help. Made me reflect through my entire life, even from when my brother died when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
What have I been doing to myself?
Yeah. You know, and Adriana Huffington, who wrote the book Thrive and was the CEO and president of Huffington Post, in her book Thrive, she talks about and shares the story that she woke up one day with her, you know, she literally crashed her on her computer. And because she crashed her head so hard on her keyboard, she broke her cheek and there's blood running down her face. And because she had been working so hard to take care of everything and everybody at her company, her family, trying to do it all like women do, she was so exhausted she just collapsed and literally had to go to the doctor because her cheek was broken and there's blood running down her face. And so her whole book, Thrive, is about finding yourself again. And one of her big things is we all need more sleep. Now, that sounds really great, but that's also really hard when you're a full-time caregiver and you're taking care of everybody else. You're just not sleeping well. And women, you know, you and I don't both know this because we've both done this, and most women do this, is we take it on all ourselves. So what are some questions maybe we should be asking ourselves when we're in that situation to maybe reach out for help sooner?
Oh, that's a really good question.
And I'm sure you're asking yourself those questions all the time, right? I'm going to put you on the spot, lady.
You know, it's funny because since the fall in November and the second fall, I've been trying to think, what are the questions I wasn't willing to ask myself? And one of the big questions that I've come up with is the title of my book. What would a wise woman do?
Exactly.
The reason I called the book that was because I had taken a course at the School of Practical Philosophy. And during the course, one of the things they said was for the next week in between for our homework for a week, was to any question that was asked of us, any situation we were put in front of us, we needed to ask, what would a wise person do in this situation? So instead of us trying to answer it for ourselves, was step outside and say, what would somebody wiser than us do in this situation? It's the premise of my radio show. It's the premise of my book. So I realized I need to be asking myself that more times than not during the day. What would someone wiser than me be doing? What would a wise woman do? What would a wise man do? It doesn't matter. It's a matter of stopping, stepping back before we react, before we respond, and give ourselves an opportunity to say, is there a better way of doing what I'm about to do?
Yeah, and this is one of my personality flaws, or just I'm a very curious research person like you are, data, facts, research, and numbers. And one of the things, I have this odd habit of always wanting to look up what words mean. And so for me, I always thought about I was working with a friend on a project about the difference between stress and peak performance. And so we always talk about reacting, right, versus being proactive. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to look up what the word react means. And this one definition I found really resonated with me, which is when you react, you're acting without thinking. And in cases where you react, that means you have just engaged your mouth without your brain. And my question to people is, how often does that turn out well for you? You know, how often does that turn out well, girl?
I can't remember the last time that turned out well for me.
Yeah. So what are some of the lessons you've learned in the time you've been taking care of your mom as a caregiver?
The biggest one is I am not superwoman. And I thought I was. I thought I could handle anything that was thrown at me, and my life has proven that I could. But I'm not. And there are some things that you need an outside person to help you with because you're just too close to it. And I'm grateful for a couple of dear, dear friends, like my friend Jenny Murphy, who owns a Pilates studio here in town, who has really helped me when I'm on the table with her and she's trying to get my body to unwind. She'll literally ask me questions and put it in my face. Look, you can't not put yourself first. Because if you don't, your mom's not going to have anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a big lesson for me recently, is I have to allow somebody else to step in and help me.
Yeah, another wise woman I met many, many years ago, her name was Bobby Gee. I actually hired her to be a motivational speaker at the bank when I was working at First Interstate Bank. And I was a VP and doing this big motivational conference for all the women and all the non-exempt staff. And her thing was, you cannot give away what you do not own. And so if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. And even when you're on the airplane, what do they tell you about the oxygen mask? They tell you put on your oxygen mask first before you try and put it on the child or somebody that happens to be with you, because you have to be able to breathe. You have to be able to take care of yourself. I mean, there used to be there was an old book out, you might remember, many years ago, back in the probably 80s or 90s, called Cinderella Syndrome. And that's the whole idea of being superwoman. And what I tell people is, you know, Cinderella is a character invented by Disney. Superwoman is a cartoon character invented by Marvel. All these people out there, they're not real. You know, you really can't do it all. Something's got to give. And what you don't want to have give is you. Because like you said, what would happen to your mom if something happened to you?
Yeah, and my body literally gave that day in November. And when I got to the doctors and finally said, I'm falling, I need to know why I'm falling, because this doesn't make sense. And they found out I was highly anemic. My iron was at 29. My vitamin B was in the toilet, my D was in the toilet, and a bunch of other numbers were off. And it was because the stress was literally eating my body.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize it, because to me, it's my mom, so it's not really stress. I knew it was stressful, right? But it's my mom, so how can I perceive it as stress?
Yeah, and, you know, taking the time to take care of yourself. I mean, eat, pray, love, exercise, take time for yourself, read, find something just to break that cycle a little bit. So what else have you learned, especially about talking with doctors? Because they can be very difficult. They either give you so much information, you feel like you asked a question and you're drinking from a fire hose because there's so much information, or they tell you nothing. So what have you learned about how to deal with doctors better when you're the caregiver?
Well, the first thing I learned is the doctors don't know everything.
Thank you.
That was a lesson I actually learned a number of years ago when I was misdiagnosed. They said I was sick because I was depressed because I wasn't with a man. And it turned out I had been bit by a tick, and I not only had Lyme, but I had babesia, and it had gotten into my brain. And that's when I realized that I knew more about me and what was going on with me than the doctors. And my dad had Parkinson's, and they wanted to write him off, and we figured it all out. And what I learned about talking to the doctors is they're not gods. They're humans. They have gone to school and learned a lot because their expertise is in medicine. My expertise is not in medicine, but my expertise is in my family, in my health, and I'm a really good researcher just like you are.
Yep.
So when you're talking to a doctor, start to understand their language. Know what their words mean. And if you don't, say stop, put that in English. It's okay to ask them to stop. And do the research afterwards. Talk to other people. You know who the best person to talk to in a hospital is? The nurse.
Yes.
Especially charge nurses. If you're having any trouble whatsoever in the hospital, just go up to the charge nurse and ask them what's going on. And they're really great at interpreting things and getting you to the right people. I actually requested different doctors take care of my mom at a hospital stay because I didn't like the way they were treating my mom.
Yeah, it's, you know, for some reason, and maybe it's because doctors go to school and they get the degrees, for some reason, we put these doctors up on pedestals. And the people who really, and no offense, my father-in-law was a doctor, my mother-in-law was a nurse, but nurses are the real caregivers. They're the one that are there with you all the time. I remember when I had my son and I was going through labor, the nurse was with me there the whole time, right? They're encouraging me. They're helping me. I ended up having to have a C-section, so they were telling me what was going to happen. And the doctor walks in for 5 minutes and goes, "You're done. You know, bing, bang, you're done. Thank you very much. Here's your baby." And I'm thinking, I think something's wrong with the pay scale here on doctors versus nurses, right? We talk about equality of women's pay, right? That women make 79 cents to a dollar compared to men, and Hispanic and Latino women make far less than that. But when you look at doctors and nurses, the nurses are the ones doing all the work. They're the ones that are there with you. They're there. They're crying with you. They're helping you. And yet doctors get paid more, and we put them up on a bloody pedestal. So we're going to take a short commercial break, and we're going to come back and continue talking with Laura Stewart, author of What Would a Wise Woman Do? Amazing woman, and talk about her her taking care of her mother and her life, but also talk a few things about her book as well and some questions we should be asking as women. So we'll be back in just a second.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, now back to Patty and her guest. And before you pick it back up here, am I allowed as a man to intervene in the women's hour here? And
of
talk
course,
about?
Of course, you always do. That's okay.
Absolutely.
This is such powerful stuff. We do a lot of shows on the network here, touching on this. Maybe it's because we're of a certain age here. I'm in my 60s and went through this with my mother and dad before they died. I didn't have to move in with them like your guest did, but I almost did. And right now I'm going through it with my maiden aunt, who's 92, who, again, I'm the sole caregiver for. My question is this. We are so prepared as a generation, more than ever, financial planning, personal goals, personal coaches, action plans, all these things. We were business plans. Why are we not planning for these moments? Why do we think they'll never happen to us until they do? And why? What would your advice be to others who are in denial that this is ever they're ever going to have to do anything like this?
That's a fantastic question. Did you want to take that, Patty?
No, I'm looking to you, girlfriend. You're in the middle of it.
From an early age, my dad taught me that you have to be realistic about life, that at some point you're going to die. And he made sure that he and my mom had their estates, wills, trusts, everything all set up. Mm-hmm. He made sure that they had written out their last wishes for how they'd like to be buried, cremated, how the ceremony would like to go. My dad actually even wrote his own obituary.
My dad, too. It's amazing. He gave me explicit instructions of how he wanted his funeral to go, down to the point that, because he's a good Irishman, he wanted to make sure we had nothing but the best booze for all his friends and that we displayed the bottles and show them that we weren't going cheap at the last minute here. So, yes, I appreciate that. So why are we so less prepared, it seems like?
Well, I know that I've taken my dad's training, leadership, to heart, and I have all of that stuff done. I have my powers of attorney set for, God forbid, I get into an accident and I can't speak for myself. The two people, I have two people, right? One local and one not local, just in case you never know what's going on. I think we're not prepared because we don't like to look at the end. You know, we've not been trained to look at mortality. Our parents' generations, I'm going to be 54 in a few weeks. Our parents' generation grew up with world wars. I mean, we have a world war, but it's different, right? We have the war on terror. So it's easy to pretend it's not happening right next door. The world wars, the Korean War, the Vietnam War. I have a lot of friends and family that were in it. I know lots of people that have the tattoos from the concentration camps they were in during the Holocaust. They look at death differently than perhaps our generation and the next generation does, because it's a little more distant and we don't look at it. You know, we're so much in the, I have to prepare for the future I have to build, I have to grow. And it's a constant need, want, search, what's the next thing?
Exactly.
As opposed to stepping back and going, well, what if tomorrow's my last day on Earth?
I have two other things I'll add to that in my own reflections. One, I think that the baby boomers are the Peter Pan generation. We're perennially young. We're never going to get old. We don't like the idea of getting old. We deny. I still dress like I'm in my college years here. And two, because of that, the whole idea of death is so removed from our society. We don't even have funerals anymore. Nobody dies. God forbid you use the word somebody died. They just passed away. You know, and then there's no funeral. You just go to a celebration of life where they're not there. You don't have to see the body, or the casket doesn't have to go down into the ground and all this stuff. So I don't know why we've removed it. It is part of living, and we seem to be in denial about that fact.
Yeah.
It's very true. I have a friend, Sandra Champlain. She wrote a book, We Don't Die. And, you know, she started on the journey after her dad died. And she was searching for something. And she has a radio show as well. And she talks about death and after death and all those other things. And it's like, get people prepared for something that's going to happen, because it's what happens to those that you leave behind. You know, if you haven't prepared for the funeral expenses, for all that other stuff, a waitress at a restaurant I go to, she looked devastated. Her brother had died a few weeks prior, and it bankrupted her virtually to bury him.
Yeah.
It took most of her savings to take care of all of those different things to bury her brother.
See it all the time, and I just, you know, what do you think, Patty? What do you think about this whole issue? Are we in denial about the where we're all headed, and are we just somehow less prepared than others? Particularly taking care of your parents. I wasn't ready for that role reversal.
No, I don't think any of us were, and that it's all reverted back. I think we do truly deny or trying to you know, hope it doesn't happen, or if I don't think about it, it won't happen. Just like a lot of people think that, you know, well, I'm never going to have this happen to me. I'm never going to get Parkinson or cancer or have a heart attack, and then it happens. And then people are sort of like, wow, that was a wake-up call. I know when my dad finally passed away in his sleep, and this is kind of an interesting little short story, is that I was on vacation in Mexico when my dad passed away. And that every day in Mexico, my son, my husband and I walked the beach, except this one morning. And I walked the beach by myself, and I saw something in the sand as I was walking on the beach, and it was getting closer and closer and closer. And when I got to what was in the sand, it was a handmade cross. It was a handmade cross with two beer cans on it.
Oh, my God.
So literally. And then I walked about another, maybe a half a mile, and my sister called me and said, Dad passed away in his sleep, which was truly a blessing.
Yeah.
So I went back to that cross and sat in the sand and cried and said, you know, thank you, God, for taking my father in his sleep and allowing him to live the most amazing life and allowing him to go in his own way. And it was pretty emotional, as you can imagine. It was just this wow moment of seeing this cross, and then my sister calls me to say my dad died in his sleep, and he had everything prepared as well, literally. And my sister has a couple little kids. My brother was going through some challenges with his own wife, who had something very similar to Lou Gehrig's disease, and so her health was deteriorating. So when it came to the funeral, I was the one that sort of took the bulk of the stuff and did the board that had all of his pictures and contacted people. But he had everything to a T, exactly what his everything was going to be, down to the music that was going to be played. And so he was prepared. So I guess for those of us who are baby boomers, you know, maybe we need to get out of denial sometime and realize this does happen. And like you said, Laura, you need to have a living trust and have something that says where, you know, what's going to happen, how you want to be taken care of. Do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? I think we have to face reality and wake up and realize, you know, it's like there's, you know, there's life, there's death and taxes both seem to be somewhat inevitable. So preparing for it is really important.
Can I ask you just both one more question? Would you, when that moment comes, do you have a funeral in mind, or do you just, is that, why is a funeral so hideous to our generation? Like, oh, no, I don't want to subject anybody to a funeral. Just have a celebration life. Just make it positive and happy. No, my dad wanted a funeral. He wanted the whole Catholic burial rite, and he had it all spelled out, the songs and the hymns and everything he wanted, you know.
I have a little bit planned out. The one thing I know for sure is they will play Amazing Grace.
Okay, all right, so there you go.
That is one of my,
makes me cry every
that is,
time I hear
that is
it.
One of my favorite songs. Favorite songs. How about you, Laura?
I want to be cremated and my ashes spread in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. That's probably what I'll do, too. So, you know, one of the things that's very difficult when you are the caregiver and you're still trying to do a little bit of your business because you're still doing some keynotes and consultings, what have you learned about managing your time?
I've learned that even though I teach time management,
boy,
it is a major struggle for me right now.
Yeah.
Because I never know when I'm going to get a shout from downstairs. Laura. I mean, I love my name, but some days I hate my name, if you know what I mean. And she can't always tell me what's going on. So I could be in the middle of something and have to stop everything. Like the other day, Mom had a PT person here working with her. And all of a sudden I hear, Laura. And I'm like, okay, but she's with somebody. And I hung up the phone with the person I was talking with because, you know, I kind of sense an urgency. And I go downstairs and there's blood. Like, there's blood. Mom has thin skin from the Coumadin and the prednisone. Yep. And the slightest little thing, her walker, a little end off of the brake line, had fallen off. And as she was walking with the PT person, mm-hmm. it dug into the side of her leg and blood was pouring out.
Yep.
I've learned wound care. I'm really good with wound care. I mean, I've walked into offices and doctors and nurses have said to me, are you sure you don't have a medical degree?
I have a medical degree through experience, right?
Through experience. You know, and it's actually got me thinking maybe I should try go get a PA or something, physician's assistant or whatever. But no, I don't want to play in that arena. It's enough to do what I'm doing. So in terms of what I've learned around time management is, number one, I need to find clients that are understanding of my situation.
Right.
And I have to have backup plans. If I'm meant to do a keynote speech and something happens to me or to my mom, who's going to cover that? You know, I mentioned that I had fallen the night before I was supposed to speak in front of 221 women. I made it there, by the way.
Of course you did.
On painkillers.
Oh, that should have been a fun speech.
And so much adrenaline. Actually, you can find it up on YouTube on the Impact 100 of Indian River County website. And I couldn't believe what I was able to do because I did the Wonder Woman thing, right? Mm-hmm. I had to be there. I had to step up. We had prepared for this for a long time, and it was important, so I made it. But what if I can't make it because something happens to mom, right? Who's going to cover that? Who's going to arrange for that? Or do I need to find somebody who can be with mom so I can go do what I need to do? So that's been the biggest thing for me, is realizing that my plans may change at a moment's notice. So I prepare my clients for that. And mm-hmm. I'm doing more work via phone, via Skype. I've really curtailed my keynotes. I am available for webinar keynotes or something local. So I'm doing more Florida-based stuff so I don't mm-hmm. have to be gone for several days.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the biggest thing I'm still trying to struggle with, and I'd love your thoughts on how to get to work with this. I don't sleep well at night, but I keep trying to sleep. And that's part of the approaching that menopause thing. I'm not all the way there yet, but it throws you completely off. My hours that I'm able to work and focus are so small. I struggle to find focus. I don't want to be working at midnight to 2 o'clock in the morning because I know if I start doing it, I'll be up even later. So how do you deal with unconventional times when the work you deal with is with people? I don't want to just be an internet marketer. I like the people connection.
Yeah, it's really a challenge, and I've kind of been through the menopause and back, and have been through the waking up 4 or 5 times a night and not being able to sleep, and so now I wake up maybe once or twice a night, which I consider to be a victory, but I am able to fall right back asleep. And so I recently was at a conference in Sacramento where I was speaking for National Association of Women Business Owners at the Propel Conference. And one of the women came up to be with me, Rhonda, a friend of mine, had come up, and she was going to stay in my room so we could save a little bit of money. And I asked her in the morning, how did she sleep? Because she didn't get to the room until midnight. We had to be up at 7 o'clock. She said, I slept like a baby. And she found a meditation app, a sleep meditation app that she listened to for a few minutes when she crawled into bed. And apparently she slept like a log. I was up all night because I knew I was going to be introducing her. I was going to be moderating a technology panel. I was going to be speaking. In my head, I was trying to rehearse what I was going to say. And I swear, at 3 o'clock in the morning, it came to me about exactly how I was going to introduce the panel and what I was going to say as my kickoff remarks. But I was sort of struggling with that all night as well. So I said, you know, I'm going to go try that sleep, the sleep app that she found on her phone to see if that's going to help in some way, which I've tried several before, but I'm going to try this one and see if it works. I don't take drugs. I don't like to take drugs of any kind. And my biggest challenge is that when I travel internationally, even if it's a 24-hour flight to India, I don't sleep on the plane. I watch 4 or 5 movies, and I kind of try and close my eyes. But
yep. The
one thing is, I heard that just staying laying down and trying to relax your brain as much as you can. I think most women suffer from monkey brain, where your brain is just falling all around, is just go with it. Just don't fight it. Just go with it for a few minutes and try the deep breathing and relaxing, and then maybe try like the meditation app that might help with that. I'm going to try that this weekend.
What's the name of the app? Do you remember?
I will have to send it to you. I think it was just called Sleep. It was called Sleep App. Was all it was Sleep App. I believe that was it.
All right.
So what tools are you using to manage your stress of caregiving? Because I think people don't understand that when you are the caregiver, you actually have more stress and potential mental and physical challenges than the person you're caring for.
I would agree with you. When I was writing my book, my husband had open heart surgery, and then my mom, 8 months later, had open heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a publisher. I didn't self-publish. I had a publisher, so I had a deadline. And, you know, the stress was really kind of insane, and it's only gotten bigger since those days, right? And what I'm learning right now is to ask for help. My own personal ways of dealing with stress don't work, as evidenced right. by the fall and having to ask for a drug to help me because it was just so bad. I used to feel that just going for a walk would do it for me, but then for like 10 weeks, I couldn't really walk because I had broken my foot. And I couldn't use an e-scooter because I couldn't use my hands, so I couldn't control the scooter. So I lost that physical ability. Here's something I just discovered for myself the other day. I went to the orthopedic surgeon for a follow-up, and I had somebody with my mom, and I was going to rush home so that I didn't have to spend too much money, right, paying for somebody to be with my mom. And I live in Sebastian, Florida, along the intercoastal, some of the most beautiful scenery around. And the river is just beautiful. Dolphins, birds, everything. It's just amazing. I'm driving down this road all along the river, and I'm just driving past it. And finally, I pulled a U-turn, and I pulled into this park, Fisherman's Landing in Grant, Florida. There was nobody else in the park, no cars. And I saw this wharf kind of going out into the water, and I just walked out there and just stood there.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt the stress leave me. And then I'm like, oh, I've got to get back. And I started walking back, and I'm almost back to the parking lot, and I see a pod of dolphins. It looked like two adults and a baby go by. And I was like, oh, but I'm leaving. No, I have to go back out. So I walked back to the end of the pier and sat there and watched the dolphins and had a conversation with a man who came out at that same time. And I realized I hadn't given myself enough time. And I was getting a sign from, mm-hmm. I don't care whether you call it God, the universe, the force. I called it the force for the longest time, big Star Wars geek here.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really what it's about. It's that whole unifying element of energy, and it's becoming aware of those moments that pause. And I'm learning to pause more. Even
right.
when I'm with my mom, if I'm getting upset, I'll pause on some smile she makes or some moment that brings me back into my body and grounds me and brings me back to me. And then it seems easier. I'm not great at it. I only got this awareness about this just the other day, but it seems to be the new thing for me. I interviewed somebody on my show recently on 42 ways to breathe.
Swami 42 ways Ashram. To breathe.
42 ways to breathe. There's actually over 200 plus ways to breathe. So I've been experimenting with one technique she showed me on the show, which was picturing a nose on the part of your body where your breath feels stuck or your body feels tight. So like if your shoulders feel really tight, mm-hmm. picture a nose on your shoulders and then breathe in to that nose on your shoulders. It is amazing how fast my body calms down because I'm breathing in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then everything starts to open. And that's been also another thing that I've been doing that's helping me deal with the stress of being a caregiver. And the other big thing, it's okay not to be perfect. If mom dies, it's not because I missed something.
Right.
It's because it was her time. I did the best I possibly could. Still struggling at moments with it, but she's had an amazing life.
Yep.
And I can't stop the inevitable. I can make her as comfortable as I can. I don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
I have to be her daughter.
Yeah.
I have to love her.
Yeah.
That's all I know for myself I need to do, and the rest of it is outside my control.
You said so much in that segment or what you just said so much about finding your special place that brings you peace, finding forgiveness of yourself, being able to forgive yourself that you're not perfect, that you're going to do the best that you can and give your mom the best possible comfort you can at this challenging and difficult time. You just said so much, and I encourage people to find your place and find your space and learn to breathe. We carry all that stress in our lives, and just learn to simply breathe a little bit more. And I'd love to know the 42 ways to breathe. But I've got one last question, and I want to make sure at the end we close with how people can get in touch with you. And what I was thinking, Laura, maybe we can take this offline, was, you know, it might be interesting to be just sort of documenting sort of what you're going through. And then when you do get the time and space, is writing a book. I hate to give you more work to do, but writing something from the heart of somebody who's been there and done that, because you're such a giver, you're such an amazing person. I found I used little index cards to write thoughts when I was writing my first book, and then I just kept all those little index cards, like the little ones in college, and then I posted them on my wall and I put them into themes, and then I just simply took those down to write the book. But document some of these insights and these nuggets, because what you're going through is amazing and your perspective on it is absolutely incredible. So sort of my last question is, you know, what advice would you give someone who is going through being a caregiver for a family or a loved one? And then also be sure and tell us how we can get in touch with you in terms of for a keynote or a keynote webinar or getting in touch with you in any way. And make sure to go to Amazon and buy What Would a Wise Woman Do?
Well, thank you. You know, in terms of a last thought for people who may be dealing with this situation, who have a career or have another life outside of caregiving, is to remember that you matter. And even if it's just for 30 seconds a day, remind yourself of that, because I literally put myself aside for the last 5 years. I kept trying to struggle and battle between the two worlds, and I'm learning to accept that I just can't do it all. It's not a balance, it's navigating, and one moment may be more weighted one way or another. I actually have a title for a book, if I do write it, called The Book of Barbara. My mom's name is Barbara. Okay. Losing oneself while caring for another. You know, awesome. I'm not really sure where it's going to go, but, you know, it's a journey. And give yourself permission to be angry, to grieve, to be happy, and to find something, whether it's a minute a day, 30 seconds a day, or an hour a day, that's just about you. Whether for me it's reading a book that I don't have to read because I'm interviewing somebody, but just fun books.
Right.
And something that'll just take you away in your world. And in terms of reaching me, the best way is my email is laura@laurasteward.com. My website's laurasteward.com. I love to hear from people. I do one-on-one coaching with people, but you know, you don't have to do that. I've got my radio show. It's all about the questions. I love to hear from people, and if there's some advice I can give, please email me and let me know. I answer all my emails myself. I answer the phone myself, and I love being there for people.
Great. Can you spell out, so we want to make sure we spell your name absolutely correctly if we're going to get to Laura Steward?
Sure. It's like a wine steward. LauraSteward, as in David. So laurasteward.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you, Laura. This has been an incredible show. I know there are a lot of people out there that are in the same situation where they're either currently trying to manage in their life, they're currently trying to manage a caregiver, or if not now, you may be facing this in the future. So this has been an incredible show. I knew it would be a great show with you, Laura, because you've been a dear friend, a mentor, and somebody I really admire. So thanks so much for your time today, and I hope you have a great weekend. So this is Patty Grimm with Women Kicking Glass. You can pick up a copy of my book on Amazon. The book is called Quiet Women Never Change History. Be strong, stand up, stand out. And the subtitle is Let's Go Kick Some Glass. All of my shows are on my Facebook page, Women Kicking Glass 2. And you can reach me at pattygrimmatlive.com. And that's PattyGrimm at LIVE.com. I thank everyone for listening. I thank Laura for just an incredible interview today, incredible information. And I really appreciate everything that you've told us today about how to take care of yourself while you're caring for others. And I hope everyone out there has a great rockin' day and a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grim.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimmatlive.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.